Fastest goals, the expert's opinions. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Trophy day at Celtic Park. It's open line time for you as well, so let's hear from you. 01419511025. Having said that, we try and spin a lot of plates in the last game of the season, so we will do calls. We'll do as many as we can, get them in. But of course, it makes sense to go back to Celtic Park as well. And keep across the celebrations, because out they come, the lot of them, led by captain Callum McGregor, goalkeepers Kasper Schmeichel and Valjami Sinisalo, the rest of the team that have all contributed. Even Rio Hatate's coming out on his crutches. We know that he has played his final part for this season. Nicholas Kuhn, Brendan Rodgers, the man who's going to take the acclaim on the pitch with the broadcasters at the moment, along with Callum McGregor. In fact, we could probably listen in and hear him.
Yes, Gordon, Callum McGregor just on the pitch speaking to the Celtic fans right now. McGregor getting closer to lifting his 10th league title at the club. What a record. Let's hear what he has to say.
Like I said, one more to go. You see again today, you know, difficult game, difficult conditions, and we keep going to the end, and obviously the man's about to come out, but what a big moment again.
He is about to come out, Callum. I'm really allowing you to join your teammates for once again, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hear it for our captain, Callum McGregor. And of course, no trophy day is complete without the silverware itself. So it's time to welcome the man who recently secured his 26th winner's medal in the hoops. He joined the Celtic Academy at the age of 9. He served the club with distinction for over 22 years. He has an honours list of 6 League Cups, 7 Scottish Cups, and an incredible 13 league titles. Ladies and gentlemen, make your voices heard for Celtic's most decorated player of all time.
So James Forrest is the man carrying the trophy onto the pitch. Looks almost embarrassed by it all, as you would expect. He doesn't like the fuss, he doesn't like the limelight. But listen to the way Celtic Park feels about him.
And manager Brendan Rodgers will now make a presentation to James. A special award to commemorate his achievement of becoming our most decorated player. A record that has stood for 46 years. And James now surpassing the legendary Lisbon line, Bobby Lennox.
James Forrest getting a recognition, as you heard, of his record-breaking haul as a Celtic player. Brendan Rodgers, who's contributed so much to James Forrest's career, as have other Celtic managers along the way, but of course the current one really revitalised him when he came in 2016, and then has come back for a second spell as well. As we mentioned, James Forrest almost doesn't like the fuss. You could tell he'd rather stay out of the limelight, but that's part of the charm. Let's hear from him.
Character, the personality that is James Forrest. Well, I think today just rounded off what has been an amazing career for him here, and he still has more to give, but the ultimate professional, a real symbol for every young academy player coming through the system, that with hard work, dedication and quality, you can succeed. And James, I know you're a team player, I know you're a humble guy. You got the goal, and what a goal it was. Can you sum up the emotions of not just those last minutes, but of all these years playing for Celtic Football Club?
It's been unbelievable. I think every moment that the fans give you, and putting in front of the fans away from home, at home every week, is amazing. And I'm just cherishing every game I play until I finish.
Well, as you can hear, James Forrest gets his acclaim. Gabriel and David Fuel, just a sort of fairy tale end, really, because, you know, 1-1 draw with St Mirren on the day, it doesn't impact anything. It was neither here nor there. But when the goal scorer is James Forrest, then it feels very different.
Yeah, it does. I think if that goal doesn't get in, it's probably, I'm not saying it spoils the party at all, because Celtic are still about to get presented with the trophy. However,
I think it just puts a different shine on the day, and it's an amazing historic achievement from James Torres, just as Brendan Rodgers is about to speak as well here, Gordon.
Well, this is what it feels like to be Celtic. I think that today belongs to us all, for the supporters, the players, the staff. It's been an incredible season so far, with one more title to go, but everyone has given everything, on the pitch and off the pitch, and for that, we're all champions today. And Brendan, you mentioned the supporters just how big a part that they play in creating what is this fantastic story of Celtic Football Club. This is what Celtic is about. I think the expectation that is put on us is because of their drive and ambition to be the very best. And that's why we work every single day of our life, to make them proud, and hopefully they're proud this season. Well, Brendan, I know that everyone will be there, hopefully in the sun at Hampden next week, as you go for the next trophy. But for now, I'll let you join your squad, ladies and gentlemen. The manager of the four in a row champions, Brendan Rodgers.
Well, as you can hear, Brendan Rodgers now getting the acclaim of Celtic Park, and understandably so, came back here to a mixed response when he decided to come back at the start of last season. He said he would see the fans at the end of May, and he did, and even then it was still taking time to win some over, but safe to say a successful campaign, a double in the bag, potentially a treble, and even Champions League progression this season. So we'll stay with it for now. It's hard for us to coordinate. I think the first player going up to get his medal, James Forrest and Brendan Rodgers joining them, Gabriel.
Yeah, Gordon, all of the players on the podium now in the sunshine. Brendan Rodgers just shaking hands with Neil Doncaster, and it's Callum McGregor. He has got his hands on the trophy, their fourth straight Premiership title, 13th in their past 14 years, and record equaling 55th title. Celtic are champions once again, and listen to this atmosphere.
Yes, that winning feeling. Hugh Evans, Brendan Rodgers said, he said this is how it feels to be Celtic, and although these fans have experienced it quite a lot in recent seasons, I don't detect any of them finding it getting boring or repetitive in any way.
No, fans of any club, they never suffer from celebration fatigue. They want to celebrate every time out, and it's a day of history at Celtic Park. Brendan Rodgers, the most decorated Celtic manager alive. You have James Forrest, the most decorated Celtic player of all time now. The passage of time comes across my mind because I knew Bobby Lennox very well. Bobby, still in Saltcoats where he always lived, a Lisbon Lion, a fantastic player for Celtic, a very lengthy career with Celtic, lasting almost 20 years, and now taken over by James Forrest, but I'm sure no one will be more delighted than the wee man in Saltcoats today.
Well, the party will continue for quite some time yet. Give us a call, why don't you, Celtic fans? How do you enjoy days like today? How do you look back on the season? And what about James Forrest? It wasn't the only game today. Big game at Easter Road in terms of entertainment value. Not a lot riding on it, but we had some good play, some bad play, some big refereeing calls. So give us your thoughts there, please. 01419511025. And we'll speak to you very soon.
The fastest goals, the experts' opinions. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Celtic Park still full, no one in the mood to leave yet. David Freer, they want to soak all this in about 5 or so minutes after the trophy was held aloft once again.
Yeah, the place is still packed. Gordon, place absolutely packed. And yeah, the players are just round in front of the North Stand just now, showing off the trophy as well. I don't think any fan here is in the mood to leave. As you say, James Forrest was the one that got all the adulation just before the trophy lifting, and Callum McGregor lifting the trophy, and the players are just taking the chance. Family's not in the pitch just yet, but the players are taking the chance just to soak it all up, and so are the fans.
And I mean, how does this one compare, David Field? You almost feel obliged to do that for no other reason than Celtic do this so often. So you wonder how they keep hitting these standards and how the fans continue to, you know, enjoy these moments so much. Because if people on the outside, you always hear those kind of cynical comments, ah, yeah, this must get boring. But I mean, look at the place. Of course it doesn't.
Yeah, of course it can't. You can't take this for granted. And I think any Celtic fan, you know, you just have to think back to the 90s, which was a pretty barren period. It'll be almost 30 years, and you'll remember this well, Mark, as well, when Celtic beat the Airdrie in the Scottish Cup final, and I think that was 1995, and that was Celtic's first trophy in, what, about 5 or 6 years back then. So I think when you look at the silverware count, the trophy count, over the last 25 years, probably since Martin O'Neill came in, different times for Celtic, but I don't think you can ever take it for granted. And in terms of how this one compares, Gordon, I think it's also been achieved with a lot of style. Celtic have scored a lot of goals this season. I think they've played some of the best football of Brendan Rodgers' both spells. I know that's always up for debate, but I think at times Celtic have been really, really entertaining to watch. And it's also been done against the backdrop of European progress. I think that's important. Celtic, the revamped Champions League format was good for them, and Celtic progressed. They gave Bayern Munich a real game in that last 16 playoff. So how does it compare? I think it's up there with the very best of the last decade anyway.
Mark, how do you feel about this period of dominance that Celtic are in? You have experienced the demands of the club and the moments like this, but similarly the disappointments. So what do you make of this current run that they're on? 4 in a row now.
Well, to be expected up until now, but I think David Wright and saying don't take it for granted. When I joined the club in 06, we went 3 years in a row and I never got bored of winning it. Trophy day, never took it for granted. And then we went, I think, 3 years without winning it. And I say don't take it for granted because this is a real pivotal summer for Rangers and what's going to happen in terms of the investment they're running in the club. So you never know what's round the corner or what's coming at you next season. And if we take it back to last season where Philippe come on, you know, it was neck and neck at one point and then Rangers slipped up and Celtic took full advantage. It was supposed to be the new dawn and Clement was going to be the challenger this year and Celtic quickly saw that off. But again, you cannot take your foot off the pedal. For these players, it's an amazing achievement for the ones that have been there and done it. But I think what's also impressive is the ones that have come in and joined have been dragged along or dragged up to the standards that's required to continue to win trophies. And it's resulted in another opportunity to win a treble. And the fans should never, ever get bored of it because you never know when it's going to stop.
I worked on this programme in May 1994 when Fergus McCann and I were thrown out of Celtic Park at the end of Celtic's game, and we went into the car park, into the Radio Clyde outside broadcast van, and Fergus McCann pleaded his case to be allowed to take over Celtic. And the fan response on this programme and in the days that followed was nothing short of astonishing. And Fergus McCann took over Celtic, removed the old board of directors, and Celtic today, those fans and players are sitting in the ground that Fergus McCann built. Celtic were 24 hours away from going out of business. That's football for you. They were nearly out of business, and but for Fergus McCann, that ground wouldn't be there. Brendan Rodgers wouldn't be there, and Dermot Desmond, who is in the stand there this afternoon, wouldn't have been there because he then gave Fergus McCann £4 million 31 years ago and has contributed to the club every decade thereafter. And he is in Glasgow today, I am sure, to look ahead to next season with Peter Lawwell, Michael Nicholson and Brendan Rodgers. And that's what football is all about, and that's why the Celtic supporters are there today, thankful to have a club at all.
Although we said, Gordon DL, you know, these days will never get tiring, you know, it's all about winning. Celtic have raised the bar to a point where fans probably wouldn't get much enjoyment. Some might not even accept stumbling over the line, or, you know, maybe one trophy or making heavy weather of it. Because of what Celtic have done and they've deserved it, they've raised their own bar. So you almost have to win in a bit of style. You almost have to win with, you know, a certain points total or a certain amount of goals scored And they've really done all that, haven't they? When you look at the final table, that's it finished for the top six today. It's 92 points. It's 112 goals for.
It's an incredible season for them, Gordon. Yes, there have been days like today where they had to scrape a draw, for instance. Not a lot of days, I've got to say. Most of them, they played with style. They won the league with style. Look, Celtic are at a stage now. They don't want to just win the league. They want to win trebles. They want to progress in Europe as well. They want to put their name up there. They've got a man at the helm, Brendan Rodgers, who they now think, believe in, that he can take them the next step. You look at the way he improves players, the way they play football. They're enjoying their day to day. They're going for a treble next week. Everybody fancies them because they never lose at Hampden with Brendan Rodgers. So it's a terrific achievement. People just sort of take this for granted now. For Brendan Rodgers this year, if he could win a treble, it's absolutely brilliant achievement for him.
0141 951 1025, give us a call, Celtic fans. What did you make of today's game and performance, if you want, or if you want to look at the wider picture, as we often do on Trophy Day, we're here for that as well. How would you sum up James Forrest's contribution on the day that he scored for a 16th consecutive season? And what about the other games as well? Dundee United in at the final minutes of the season to clinch a place in Europe. How good does that sound, Dundee United fans? It does appear that there's been a bit of an unsavoury incident at the end of that game with an injury to an Aberdeen player. So I'll tell you a bit more about that. We can take some of your calls. We'll get reaction from the games as well, including Easter Road. So whichever is on your mind, call us now and we'll try and speak next.
The fastest goals, the experts' opinions. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Well, Celtic Park is finally starting to quiet down after Trophy Day. All the celebration that goes along with it, Callum McGregor just currently speaking on television after yet another trophy for him. Incredible to think he's not the most decorated player in that dressing room, because that belongs to James Forrest, who scored again today. But that's Callum McGregor's 10th league title with Celtic, 4 as captain. So he really is at the heart of this sustained period of success. Don't forget, the phone lines are open. It's just always a bit more challenging on Trophy Day, when we're back and forward. But please do give us a call, 01419511025 right now. Celtic fans, what did you make of the game today? What do you make of the season overall? James Forrest's contribution, the record-breaking goal that he scored towards the end. Of course, you can talk about the game specifically. There were other games as well, Easter Road, Tannadice. Lots to get through with Hugh Keevans, Mark Wilson and Gordon DL. But it just looks like the players are all taken in at Celtic Park, Hugh Keevans.
Yeah, Callum McGregor has his own particular type of distinction. I always feel that he took the place of Scott Brown, who was monumental as a Celtic captain. And the transition was seamless. McGregor picked up where Scott Brown left off. Trophies were won, trebles were won. And he has been an outstanding Celtic player and an outstanding captain. Like Brown, he will take some replacing when the time comes. But now is a day of celebration and a time to look forward to a Scottish Cup that offers the prospect of a treble and a world record-breaking treble into the bargain. The time will come thereafter when people can talk about what happens at Celtic now. They've lost Jota. They may lose other players to the transfer system. Greg Taylor's future is undecided. Dyson Maeda, apparently not yet willing to sign an extension to his contract. All of that will come after the cup final. But today, a day of undiluted celebration.
McGregor, I mean, just such an influence in this side. Even if you take that armband off, you think he actually just the playing style of Celtic and how it really revolves around someone like him. And Scott Brown was the same. He was a real leader, Scott Brown. And in Brendan Rodgers' first period, he, you know, extended Scott Brown's career. He taught him how to play a different way. And you've seen Scott dropping so deep into the back line to get the ball on, it caused teams a problem, and Celtic got a lot of success from that. But Brendan Rodgers slightly changed that, and Cal McGregor's thrived off that. You add in the armband and he has the heartbeat at the side, everything flows through him, and if you take him out the side, you can see a real difference. And that's the real markings of a top captain, a top player, but a top captain. You take him out the side, you see a difference in terms of the levels, in terms of the drive of the team. And you just wonder how long he continues. I mean, he still looks fit as a fiddle. Retired from international duty, so he's playing less games, but he's still playing, what, 50 plus a season. So it's not as if he's getting much rest. But he is going to be about for a long, long time. And he's going to keep that armband, and you wonder how many titles he can add to that in that time.
I agree with that, Mark. I think there's still a lot of mileage on Callum McGregor. I think he's getting better with age. He's more experienced. You look at him this season, he's added goals as well. He was a real threat. He's a leader, and he's well respected there, obviously. The fans love him as well. There's certainly, you look at that squad and you're thinking, right, who's got to replace him? I think it takes a big player to replace Callum McGregor, just what he brings to the club as well. But I think Callum McGregor has got a lot more miles in his legs.
Yeah, I mean, David Frehley's obviously been key to it, and those stats, just quite incredible. A 10th league title for him.
Yeah, he has been, and he's the perfect captain for Brendan Rodgers in so many ways, Gordon. And it's just in terms of having that humility, but also he knows the standards. You know, as the guys are touching on, Scott Brown, he learned from him. I think he's taken it on again, and he very rarely misses a game. He obviously had that injury towards the back end of last season, but I think Colin Timmy's Scotland career, which was obviously a blow for the country because he was such a mainstay of Steve Clark's plans, I think it's just given him a bit of freshness this season. And the goals he scored from distance, and just his general influence on the team, just remains huge. Look, I do think Celtic down the line will start to think about a succession plan, who will take that mantle going forward, because I don't think you can rely and Callum McGregor over the next 2-3 years to still be playing 55-60 games a season. However, as an ambassador for Celtic, as a captain, he's first class.
Do you think today, David, was almost that, you know, that kind of, I don't want to go overboard, but the fairy tale element of it, James Forrest, it's been building up to seeing if he could score in his 16th consecutive season. But no, rather than just scoring the fourth goal in an easy win 5 weeks ago or whatever, it's the 93rd minute of the final game of the season.
Yeah, I was covering the game up at Pittodrie on Wednesday night, and he was trying his very, very best, didn't he? Dimitar Mitov denied him on a couple of occasions. And yeah, look, Brendan Rodgers, you almost get the feeling he'd been fed up, been asked about it over the last couple of weeks. Will you let James Forrest hit penalties? All that sort of stuff. But yeah, for it to happen in the circumstances, to get a draw, final day of the season, final seconds of the final game of the season, is just incredible. And I actually thought when the ball fell to Alistair Johnson that he'd picked the wrong option. I thought he should have taken a shot, but what do I know? He unselfishly plays it to James Forrest and he does the rest. But yeah, look, the stats and the accolades and the record of Celtic's most decorated player, you could go on forever about them. Again, very humble. We spoke earlier, he's a kind of reluctant hero, doesn't like the spotlight, but what a day for him today. And I just wonder if there's another chapter to be written next weekend as well for James Forrest.
There's a good question. I wonder how honest Alistair Johnson would be. Would he have passed it to Nicholas Kuhn? Did he see James Forrest out the corner of his eye and think, oh, I better give it to him?
Well, yes, I think he looked at Forrest and thought, maybe play the percentages here. It's got to happen sometime. And it changed the whole complexion of the day for Celtic, you know, because I know that nothing would have diluted the title-winning celebrations, but you really, in your deepest subconscious, don't want to go into it on the back of a home defeat. So the fairy tale aspect was there. It was James Forrest. It was the dying seconds of the game. It saved the game from being a defeat for Celtic. It gave him a historical distinction, scoring in every season for the last 16. So it was just perfect for James Forrest.
Yeah, without doubt, a fairy tale. But I thought, take away the goal and James Forrest, let's talk about his performance. I thought he just lifted Celtic. We spoke about Kuhn has been a top performer and deserves all the plaudits this season. He's been incredible. But his performance levels weren't there today. And it must be great for Brendan Rodgers to turn to someone as decorated and as old in terms of a winger like James Forrest and say, go and affect the game in a positive way. I thought he came on and gave so much. And that's when Celtic started to create chances from his direct running. And that's, again, why I think he's got a huge part to play next season, but in the immediate future, next week, in the cup final. Brendan Rodgers must go away and analyse that and think, by the way, if we're going to start on the front foot and I'm looking for someone with real quality and who is in top form at the minute, James Forrest is my man. Now, it might mean he plays off the left. and put Maeda through the middle, but he's certainly an option for next week and a fairy tale ending for him to get the goal.
I agree with that. I certainly think that when the substitutions were made, I think Brendan Rodgers was probably angry, disappointed with the performances. He needed someone to lift the team. James Forrest is that man. I thought he was brilliant when he came on. I watched him the other night, and I think that's maybe why he was on the bench, his age. Played the other night at Pittodrie. I thought he was very good there as well. Got his goal. I will not be surprised, not be surprised, if James Forrest is in the starting 11 next week in the cup final.
Well, let us know. What do you think? 01419511025. You're more than welcome to tweet us at Clyde SSB. I mentioned that unsavoury incident at Tannadice. We'll give you Jim Goodwin's thoughts on it in the not too distant future. But just to bring you up to speed, so Jack McKenzie, Aberdeen sub on the day, it looks like, and obviously I'm choosing words carefully because I just wouldn't want to get the detail wrong. It's not for any sinister reason, I just wouldn't want to get it wrong. It looks like a seat or something was thrown from the stand and it hit Jack McKenzie in the head. He then had to be bandaged up and wheeled away. So a fairly, I think, unsavoury is probably an understatement here.
Or without doubt. You know, I think it's a shame that Derek McInnes can't be at Kilmarnock and Hearts tomorrow because people are afraid of something unsavoury. And here we have a player.
To be fair, that might just be more of a kind of awkwardness thing, but this is a proper tangible incident that we don't want to see.
No, absolutely not. You know, the playing surface is supposed to be the player's safe place. That's where he works. Now, it doesn't matter what the score was. It doesn't matter the implications of the score. You cannot, must not have a situation whereby professional footballers are injured by objects thrown from off the park. There will have to be a full-scale investigation into what happened, and that there are too many full-scale investigations going on. Too many Police Scotland matters arising from football matches. You know, I know that there's a generational gap and that younger people want to behave in a certain way, but this cannot be allowed to go on.
Yeah, really poor from obviously whoever threw it, and investigation will tell us that. But for McKenzie, he started off having a great season, and there's a game left to go for Aberdeen, a huge game at Hampden, and will that impact his chances of being in and around the squad? Not what anybody wants to see at the end of the season, especially when you've got a big game round the corner.
I think as well, Gordon, it become, you know, we're seeing things get thrown all too often, and it was inevitable. It's almost like, what, it's fine to throw something until somebody gets hit. This is what everybody's been warning about. Like, I don't really know how people thought it wouldn't end this way at some point.
Yeah, you're endangering someone's life with that action. It's not acceptable. I think Martin makes a great point. Personally, for a player, he's got a cup final next week. We don't know the extent of the damage he's gotten. That could rule him out, one of the biggest games of his career so far. So we wish him all the very best, and hopefully the culprit is really punished for this.
In fact, I'll let you hear from Jim Goodwin on it just now, because we'll get in the rest of the post-match reaction making its way to us.
I mean, look, I deliberately took myself out of the situation pretty quickly when the referee blew his whistle, and just got myself up the tunnel. You know, I've heard since what's happened, and it's an absolute disgrace. You know, got it for Jack McKenzie, who's a terrific young player, and for him to be hit and seriously damaged, I'm led to believe he's down having stitches right now, but to be hit by an object thrown by his own supporters, it's crazy. And it's not the first time. You know, I've had a number of objects thrown at me throughout the season by the Aberdeen supporters, and nothing has been done about it. So maybe it'll take for a serious incident like this to happen in order for the authorities to really step in and take notice and punish those guys and ban them for football for life.
Yeah, not great at all. We wish Jack McKenzie well. Hopefully he recovers. And obviously the person who threw it gets caught and dealt with appropriately. But we'll wait and see what comes out in the wash. Details perhaps still a bit unclear at this early stage. We're going to, of course, get reaction from Celtic Park, but inevitably it's taking its time, because there are celebrations to be completed before Brendan Rodgers thinks about coming to speak to the press. However, Barry Ferguson has, so take a listen, Rangers fans. Let us know what you made of it. This was him on the goal that never was, of course. It looked to a lot of people like it had crossed the line. the VAR team, the officials, felt like they didn't have anything absolutely conclusive. Kind of shades of that Daizen Maeda one at Easter Road. And it wasn't given. But to make matters worse, Hibs went right up the other end immediately and scored. This was Barry Ferguson's take on it.
I mean, I don't think you need goal line technology for that incident. It's clear to say it's over the line. Yeah, look, I'm in the moment in the game. I can't think back, but first thing I'd done was go over to our monitor and had a look. And it's clear as day. Clear as day.
Rangers have actually issued a statement on it, Hugh. Or a Rangers spokesperson says incidents like this again bring into question the effectiveness of VAR and also highlight the need to introduce goal line technology. Our supporters, players, staff deserve better. We'll raise this with the Scottish FA and continue to press for initiatives which improve the accuracy of decision making.
Well, go ahead and raise it with the SFA, because Rangers like a statement, and that's not a criticism, but take it further, take it on from the statement, go and do something tangible. And then we'll see where the SFA take us. It's regrettable that we have VAR but do not have goal line technology. How much does it cost?
It's pretty pricey.
Let's ask the practical questions then. How much does it cost? Is it affordable? Is it absolutely out of the question that we have it? Let's do something tangible for the good of all.
The question has been asked before, Mark, and on specifically on goal line technology generally, we can argue about this incident. The clubs can introduce it if they want. They need to pay for it. That's just the way it works. Are you trying to tell me that Nick Walsh, Willie Collum, any of their colleagues
wouldn't want it?
Yeah. The clubs can get goal line technology if they pay for it. But if you're St Mirren, your Motherwell, Kilmarnock, if you brought your Partick Thistle team up, you might. And it doesn't feel that way right now if you're Rangers and you're involved in the kind of heat of the argument. You might think, right, let's look at that season. Every team played 38 games. That's a lot of matches of football. How many goals, how many times did we actually need goal line technology throughout the course of an entire season? Bet it wasn't many.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe you do want it for that one moment that could mean so much to you.
Yeah, exactly. And the one today doesn't mean anything really in the wider context. But it's still frustrating. I could have, of course, and I totally see your point. For Celtic, for Rangers, yeah, splashing a bit of cash on that sort of structure, no problem. But for the teams further down the league, then that is a big ask and how it eats into your budget. Just from my point of view, the one today is, like Barry Ferguson says, it's clear as day for me. So the issue is there something that I'm not seeing then? I've played the game for a long time. I've been in there in it. We all consume it on the TV. And I'm looking at that going, how can our officials, without goal line technology, think that that's inconclusive? I get the angles, I get the perspective.
I think that's the point, isn't it? So what Barry Ferguson's saying, actually, he doesn't think it takes goal line technology. He thinks you can just see it. I think something he didn't mention, I think what it does probably need is goal line cameras to be absolutely sure. And I take your point as well. Do you want to force me to answer, do I think it looks over the line? Yes, I do. Of course I do, the same way you do. I just wonder if you're sort of almost, there becomes a fear of guessing, or the Maeda thing kind of highlights the need for absolute conclusive proof. I don't know what that looks like, though, I must admit, having seen that today.
That looks like conclusive proof to me. How far over the line does it need to be conclusive?
I don't think it's that. I think it's probably the angle that gives you, as an example, if you can look right down on it or you can look right along the line, then you would say, but everyone's now, quite rightly at times, got aware of the idea of perspective. And you'll remember the one in the World Cup. Do you remember, Japan? Yeah. It gets to the byline. Everybody's saying it's out, like we are, every single person. But the spider cam in the stadium that day, wheeled across, was right above it, and actually told you, because remember, if 1 centimetre of the ball is overhanging any part of the line, then it's on the line and it's not a goal. So I think it becomes that fear of...
But we've not got a spider cam.
Exactly.
We've not got cameras on the goals, so we've not got that conclusive proof that they're looking for. What we've got then is what we've got just now. And that's, surely that becomes conclusive proof.
Well, I believe it or not, I actually agree with parts of that, because I'm now thinking, well, if that isn't enough, Will it ever be enough?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What level of...
There's a subtle difference between the Alistair Johnston one at Easter Road and this one involving Rangers at Easter Road. For me, the subtle difference being that the ball's in the air.
That's true.
The ball being on the ground when Alistair Johnston took it over to Dyson Maiden and he scored. Everyone could then argue whether it's over, all of it's over, none of it's over, whatever. But this time the ball's in the air, which makes judgment even more difficult for me. But I repeat, by all means protest, but carry your protest on and see if there... I ask another question, I don't know the answer. Do the SPFL have any form of central funding? Are they able to...
No, not really, I don't
offer
think.
..offer money? Well, in that case, you have to have the clubs and say, okay, goal line technology, goal line cameras will cost X... Are you willing to pay 1/12 of X? And let's try and get a practical solution.
I think the clubs know what the cost is. It's much the same argument about the version of VAR that we've got. We could have, obviously, we could have brought in a version of VAR, Gordon, that had 40 cameras in every game. But the clubs would have had to pay for it. You know, it's not none of it's done just randomly. What do you make of this one today?
Honestly, when I seen it, I'm with you, I'm with Mark. I think looking at the angles, I think the ball's over the line.
Do you think you can be sure?
I think I can, in my opinion, right? Unless I see something that really blows my mind, I think the ball's over. I think it's one of those, if that's given, I don't think Habs are complaining.
It's a good point, that, because...
I don't think Habs are complaining.
This is where I think it is difficult, Mark, if you don't have this official conclusive proof, whatever that means. Because where this feels slightly different to Daizen Maeda is some people looked at Daizen Maeda's and thought, that's out of play. Some other people, and lots of them, looked at Daizen Maeda's and thought, that's still in play. I think if we were all being quite honest and maybe put team biases and allegiances to one side... I think everybody thinks that's over the line today, don't they? Yeah. I think that's maybe why the logic is the same, the principle is the same about conclusive proof, but it's almost like this is a slightly more extreme example. Because fine, and Willie Collum or whoever else, if they're saying that's not conclusive proof, okay, will we ever get conclusive proof then to meet your standard, your criteria? Because if that isn't it today, it certainly does look... quite a bit over the line.
And that's what I'm struggling with, to understand what that is. That's why I said, how far does it need to be over the line before there is that common sense, yeah, that's a goal? Because show me why it was ruled it.
Here's another one, which just this sounds bad, right? And it sounds extreme, but again, this won't be entirely different from other countries. See if it's a live television game. Mm-hmm. You can have more cameras there than when it's not a live television game.
Yeah.
So see if that game's live on Sky today. I think there's every chance there is a camera there that picks it up.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, does that make it easy to stomach? No, I'm not saying that makes it all okay.
Sometimes, but by the
again,
way, sometimes
that is
teams
the reality of it.
Themselves fix their own cameras. Just, you know, inexpensive ones, GoPros and things behind the goals for the social media posts. I wonder if any, in the coming days, it will not affect the game, but if Hibs have a camera or Rangers sometimes have a camera,
come out with evidence.
No, it doesn't matter to them, does it?
But like I say, to be fair, people think, Barry Ferguson said he went and looked at it on Rangers' own monitor. Oh, yeah. He thinks that is the proof anyway. Mm-hmm. The Scottish FA, you know, clearly won't agree. I think my understanding of the way these things work and how many cameras are there and where they are, I think if that same incident happened at Celtic Park today, the live Sky game, I think you get your conclusive proof.
By the way, did the referee get called to the monitor to check it, or was it just a VAR call?
Yeah, you wouldn't for that.
He wouldn't? No. So that's interesting as well. I wonder if the referee on field, if he has a look at that and those pictures, if you had to ask him, do you think that's in? That would be an interesting conversation to
again,
see what he says.
But it's just not the question, is it? Do you think, you know, that's not what the protocol allows to come into that. But and then also you've got Nick Walsh is the referee, so he takes the can. But you know, the assistant referee generally would advise on whether the ball's over the line or not. It's there's a lot going on, shall we say. Right, plenty more reaction to today's talking points. If you want to wade in on any of that or reflect on Trophy Day for Celtic and James Forrest and all the rest of it, call us now and we'll speak to you next.
It's Clyde One Super Scoreboards Open Line 0141 951 1025. After the action, it's your reaction. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboards open line.
Hugh Keevans, Mark Wilson, Gordon DLR here taking your calls, but of course reflecting on Trophy Day at Celtic Park. We'll start getting some reaction when Brendan Rodgers and some of his players eventually make their way to the press room. We heard from Barry Ferguson. He is baffled by the decision to not award Rangers a goal, which led to Hibs going up the other end and scoring. Yes, I'm sure many people want to debate that and they can, but the bigger picture is his future. Was it his last game in charge?
Well, we'll see over the next couple of days, but I hope not, because I know I can do the job. If I get the right tools, I know I can change it. So we just need to wait and see over the coming days what it brings.
Well, he's adamant. In spite of the overall picture being that in 15 games as interim manager, he was not all he might have been during the audition to be Rangers' permanent manager, but he remains adamant that he is certain he can do the job. And as he rightly says, over the coming days, we'll get an indication, because that's it. The season's over for Rangers. The league season is over. And they have now got to take the steps that move people forward. So, king among those is who's the manager going to be. So I would expect a definitive answer on that, not in weeks, because Rangers don't have weeks. That definitive answer has to come in a matter of days.
It's quite something, Gordon, that even the season is officially done. Rangers have played the last game. The clue is in the name. It's a post-match press conference. But Barry Ferguson, and by the way, not holding this against him, but still in the position where he said, you know, I hope so. I hope it's still me. It's just, you do wonder how quickly this will move and how many people out there think that it might still be Barry Ferguson?
Got to move quickly. I feel for Barry, because I think he deserves the right to know if it's going to be him or not. Me personally, I don't think Rangers will go down the road with Barry Ferguson. I keep saying it. I've praised him since the day he walked into the job, because I thought he brought the fans, the club, everything together. He's had a mixed bag of results, some real good results in there, and none bigger than going to Celtic Park. But I just feel that Rangers, under new ownership, a freshness, everything about them, I don't think Barry will be in the dugout for the start of next season.
You're in a similar boat to Mark Wilson, just in the sense that you've completed, or have you, an interim position. Just how do you look at it then, with a, like I say, similar feelings, but looking at it through the Rangers' perspective?
Well, he obviously doesn't know anything, and that's because there's so much uncertainty about the club. And again, similar to where I find myself just now, those who are the key decision makers are still taking their time to, well, the difference is with Rangers, get in place at the club first and foremost rather than make the decisions. So he's saying all he can say at the minute. He obviously loved his time in the dugout. He obviously thinks he can do better, as we all do as coaches. Everybody, tell me a coach that doesn't think they can do better with better tools, and they means better players. So of course he's still keeping himself in the running. I think there will be a change, but he's saying all the right things in the hope that somebody comes in and thinks, yeah, I like a lot of what you've installed, I like the standards, that's where Rangers have to be at. But I think it's more hope rather than expectation from Barry Ferguson at this minute.
Yeah. Let's bring in Thomas, who's on the line. How are you, Thomas?
Hi guys, I'm fine, thank you, in this sunny day.
Beautiful weather, isn't it? What are you thinking today?
Terrific. Well, first of all, as a coming from a blue nose, the first thing you've got to say is congratulations to Celtic. The final league table doesn't lie. We can argue about decisions, anything else. The league table doesn't lie. The best team at the end of the season wins the league, and that's what Celtic have done yet again. So congratulations to them. My point doesn't involve Rangers. We were speaking earlier on about VAR and technology, etc. I want to highlight three decisions, two of which have come in the last 3 days, which three of the most howling decisions of the season, in my opinion. The penalty against Dundee, or the Dundee penalty, that didn't relegate St Johnstone, but didn't help. And the Nico Raskin goal, which I saw on the TV. There's another decision as well. There's one thing that these two decisions have in common, is Nick Walsh. The other decision I'm going to highlight is where VAR did get involved, and it was where Mohamed Diamandi was sent off quite a while ago. And the referee, and I'm sure it was Nick Walsh, was called to VAR when they said in his ear, have a wee look at this. This is really a slap. Is it really a punch? Nick Walsh was called over to VAR. How many times do you see a ref go to VAR and come back and stand by his decision? But Nick Walsh stood by his decision and sent off Diamandi, which again, in my opinion, was a howling decision. The problem, one of the problems is, no matter what technology we get, we have bad referees, and I'm not saying that this is an anti-Rangers agenda because one of them involved in D. This is, we have bad referees, and even with technology, as well as having bad referees, we've got referees with massive egos, and I think Nick Walsh comes into that category. Where is the structure to deal with referees who are consistently not up to standard? You know, I'm sure if the season was ongoing, I'm sure Nick Walsh wouldn't be relegated to League One or League Two. And I think that's where we need some form of discipline for refereeing going forward.
Yeah, I mean, on that, to be fair, that actually has happened this season now. It never, we'll never satisfy everyone. You might think it doesn't last long enough, and then eventually but there's been loads after the cup final, and there have been ones that maybe people haven't noticed. Various referees have been taken out, rested, call it what you will, Hugh, after mistakes. In fact, I think Alan Muir is now not refereeing, not in the VAR anymore going forward. I think the difficulty with when we want to pin like blame or accountability always on one person is today's a great example of that. Yeah, like Nick Walsh is the referee, and of course he can try and give the goal, but there is an assistant there who can flag if he thinks the ball's over the line. And in fact, usually the assistant referee is the one, because he's looking along the line. Then there is a VAR team, and if the VAR team feel that they've got a conclusive angle, Nick Walsh wouldn't actually even make the final decision on it. They would just say goal. The goal would stand. So that this notion that, and by the way, Thomas makes some good points. We all said our thoughts about the Diomande one at the time. But this notion that today is Nick Walsh's fault, I don't know if that stands up to scrutiny when there's so many other people involved.
Thomas would like to blame an individual when it's a team game off the park as well. So Nick Walsh, and that includes the decision given in favour of Ross County and against Dundee to award the penalty. That was a collective decision, not an individual's decision.
And by the way, see, on that, I think it's extremely harsh. I think you'll think it's extremely harsh.
Without doubt,
but we should not rule out the possibility that in refereeing circles, they actually don't feel that that's a howling mistake. They might say that hand is above his head and therefore it's a penalty. So again, when we broad brush everything or we package it all together, sometimes it puts maybe just a fraction of an exaggerated slant on it.
But again, in summary, Thomas is blaming an individual when it is a collective. And I think fans, as they do with players, have favourites and non-favourites. And Nick Walsh, I think with Rangers supporters, comes into the latter category. Rangers fans don't like Nick Walsh in charge of their games, and that applies to Kevin Clancy. So there's nothing any of us can do about that. That's a personal matter. But the broad brush is that it's an individual who made the decision, but it was a collective decision to back him.
Do you see the distinction, Thomas? Because I do take your point, and I wouldn't pretend to deny Nick Walsh is not involved or he's the referee. But if someone in his ear today says, listen, that's over the line, give the Rangers goal, then that's what would happen. And then we wouldn't be having this discussion then.
That's where the speculation comes in. First of all,
That's exactly how it would work. Well, I'm not really speculating. I'm just saying, if it was over the line, if they felt they saw something, it would be taken out of Nick Walsh's hands.
If the linesman, from what I gather, Farr has it in the goal. Again, it's not down the Rangers. I know Hugh was saying that I'm not one of the supporters who has. I see bad refereeing, and I've seen Nick Walsh on the TV in other games, and I just don't think he measures up to it. I don't have an issue with Kevin Clancy or any of the other ones, but I do think there are one or two who are just not up to scratch, not only in Rangers games, in every game. With this one, where we have we're not privy to is the conversations. For example, we don't know, and again, I don't know if this is feasibly possible, but for example, the, to use the Nico Raskin example, is the lineman, the linesman, has he got the facility to say to Nick, Nick, I think that's a goal? And Nick comes back to him and says, well, listen, I'm nearer the goal line than you are. I don't think it crossed the line. I think I had a better view than you. We're not privy to that conversation. I'm not saying that conversation took place. I actually don't know. Is that a possible?
Yeah, well, to be we tend to hear the VAR audio and all the big incidents now, Mark.
But the referee can speak to his assistant referee. They are mic'd up.
But sometimes I don't think you need to hear. I think it's quite obvious. Nick Walsh and the linesman don't think it's crossed the line.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear the audio to know that, because they haven't given the goal, right?
Exactly. So it's a simple one.
Don't need to hear that. They don't think it's crossed the line. Mm-hmm. Now the audio will simply have to back that up. But what else could it be? And I'm not trying to be, you know, smart about that, but they haven't given the goal, so they don't think it's crossed the line. And I've not heard the VAR audio yet, but I would bet you any money it goes along the lines of, right, give me another angle. Do we think is that a cross? I don't think there's anything conclusive. Okay, on-field decision stands.
Yeah.
It can't be anything more than that. I know we build it up and we expect to hear something, you know, magical, but that has to be how it goes.
Yeah, and I actually have sympathy for Nick Walsh in this incident, because those are the ones you are heavily relying on your assistant on the line for. That's basically...
Yeah. Or then VAR.
Or then VAR's your backup. So I can excuse a referee, because I'm not entirely sure where his position would be, but I can assume that it's going to be central, so he's going to be looking at it from behind, if that makes sense. So he can't judge. He's not got a perspective on it. But the assistant should certainly be able to see it. And if that fails, of course, VAR's your safety net. So I think Nick Walsh should be excused on this occasion. I don't know much about his other decisions, but it's harsh pinning the blame on him today.
And then that is where worldwide Gordon VAR is a frustration in terms of the sort of order or the way decisions are made. Because if the linesman says, the assistant or Nick Walsh today says, I think that goal's in, give the goal, VAR is then not going to rule it out, because if it doesn't have conclusive proof one way, it doesn't have conclusive proof the other
way.
So that's where it is frustrating. You obviously, the VAR shouldn't take this away. The onus is on the on-field officials to try and get the decision right first.
Look, if I'm the Rangers camp today, I'm very disappointed that goal's not been given. Right, 100%. I look at some of the Thomas is talking about there, some of the decisions that Nick Walsh has made. I can see why he gave the penalty for Ross County, right? I can see that. If I'm Ross County, I'm screaming for that. If I'm Dundee, I'm thinking that is very hard on us. But I think that's a decision that you can't see as an obvious mistake.
Like it's not an objective official mistake. Yeah. Like some people might consider it to be that, but it doesn't go down.
When I watched it back about two or three times, Gordon, I can totally understand why that decision was given. It's as simple as that. Today, I think the officials got that wrong, right? I really do. I know all the excuses. You need that 100% proof evidence that the ball's over the line. But for me, I think that goal should have stood today.
Thank you to Thomas. 0141 951 1025. Still time to get your calls in. We will speak to you when we return.
Games are over, the talking begins. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboards open line.
Hugh Keevans, Mark Wilson, Gordon DL are here. I'm going to apologise majorly to Fraser Wishart. I've kept him hanging on for ages, but it's just I've such a busy day when this happens. Well, he's not been sitting there all that time. He went away and came back. He's still with us, Fraser?
Yeah, still here.
Sorry,
you can hear me now.
At least you know what you do know what trophy day is like. You've been round this block many times. But I really want to get your thoughts. I know you won't mind because of how serious it is. And obviously you with your PFA Scotland hat on. Look, you've been big on this for a long time, Fraser. And now one of the players, one of your members essentially, I don't know the official wording on that, but you know, has been hit with an object thrown from the crowd, and in a pretty nasty outcome as well.
Yeah, I think this is taking it to a different level now. A nasty outcome for Jack McKenzie, who's actually on our management committee as well, on our board at PFA Scotland. And we had a meeting the other day, he was there. So I'll have a chat with Jack at some point once the dust has settled. It's a pretty bad one, and if you see it on social media, you know, he was wheeled off in one of these kind of chairs, bandaged around his head, he's had stitches, I'm not sure how bad it is, Jimmy Tilling said he's had a number of stitches. And yeah, you're right, I've been on this for quite some time. it's Groundhog Day. Even just about 10 days ago, I was speaking about it in an article in the Herald, you know, saying I don't understand the mentality of people, but if it gets to the stage where a player gets injured and then we're contacted a union, then we're into a different domain. So I think today we've seen it recently. Sinisalo was complaining about all the stuff that's thrown at him. We've seen it to Sean Mackey at United recently in the playoffs. We've seen it up and down the country. So it's not just at the Aberdeen supporters, but somebody somewhere thought it was good. And it's the area to the left of the dugouts, in the main stand. Somebody thought it was a good idea to break off a seat. May well have been throwing it at Dundee United fans. A few of them apparently were goading, and it was no more than that, goading. They were on the pitch goading the Aberdeen supporters. Somebody thought it was a good idea to throw it. It's hit Jack McKenzie and it's caused damage, and once the dust settles, football needs to take a hard look at itself, because football player has been hurt at his work, and that's unacceptable. We would not accept that as employees in any other walk of life, and players will not accept that anymore.
In your opinion then, Fraser, what's the kind of best way to tackle this? Because of course, look, we've been round this types of discussion before, where the police quite obviously should take action there. If you go and whack someone in the head in the street with a chair, you would get in trouble for it. So can the police do that? What more can clubs do? We've then obviously had the argument about, do you punish a club overall for the actions of one fan and so on. So we've had these discussions before. Now that we've got to a pretty serious stage, what's the most effective way?
Well, I think the most effective way is for people to actually sit down and try and find a solution to it, because what we've got at the moment, football is governed by the clubs. The clubs make the rules for clubs. The clubs make the rules for investigations in these situations, and the SFA and their rules are not allowed to investigate a game that involves it's an SPFL game. So it's down to the SPFL, and I've got every sympathy with the SPFL, every sympathy with Aberdeen as a club and every other club when their fans misbehave. But what I can say is, we've seen a real uplift this season in bottles and objects being thrown at people. Jim Goodwin was talking about it in the media conference there, about the same from the same place in the stand in December. He was hit by a quarter bottle of vodka, an empty one or something like that. So I think we've sat back and have warned and said, when somebody gets hurt, we need to have a conversation. It needs to go to a different level, and I think this almost has to be taken out of the hands of the clubs and the governing bodies and ourselves and the managers and coaches, because their members are getting hurt as well. Should sit around the table and say, right, what's the best way forward? Now, nobody wants to be closing stands, and sanctioning clubs is the last thing on the agenda, but what's happening just now isn't working, and that's where we have to start from. There's an issue. What we have just now isn't working. How do we solve this? Because what went on today just took it on to a different level. It's pretty bad. Have a look in social media if anybody's listening, and have a look at search for Jack McKenzie. You'll see the photographs. Quite disturbing.
Do you detect an appetite, Fraser, for things to change in any meaningful way, or people to really try and think outside the box? Because I think we would all accept that it's quite complex, and there are a lot of parties there and stakeholders, as you mentioned, and finding the perfect solution might be difficult. But you kind of have to when stuff like this is happening.
Well, they have to, but will clubs want to do it? No, is the answer. So that would be step one, that the clubs have any interest in trying to find a solution to it. And my concern is, you talked about stakeholders there, that's the best way of doing it. Solve it within football, because remember, Dundee United, every football club that puts on a football game has to have a licence from its local authority. The government have looked at this over many years and are looking and seeing what is going on. And local authorities are saying, violence took place in an event in a public park. We'd close it down and they wouldn't be allowed to have it again. That's where we get to. If it gets out of football's hands and it gets into politicians, into government's hands, and into the police's hands, that then becomes a major problem. None of us want that. So we have to try and find a way, at least to be trying to do something, rather than just sitting saying, we'll just get football banning orders, it's up to the police. Of course it is. But football is a responsibility as well, and the governing bodies and the clubs have a responsibility to protect our members and the managers and coaches' members as well when they're in a place of work. So I think conversations have to be had in the coming weeks.
Yeah, thank you very much to Fraser Wishart. A very unsavoury incident into that game. A great occasion for Dundee United, but at the end of it, that's a real worrying incident involving Jack McKenzie, and we hope he is okay. I do want to end on a bit more of a positive, so just forgive me for moving on so quickly, but I can see time getting against us. Let's hear from Brendan Rodgers on, no surprises, James Forrest.
He's created the narrative today. It was a brilliant way to end what has been a fantastic league campaign for us, and I wasn't sure if he was going to do it. He came into the game. I moved him over to the left side to see if we could get him to cut inside a wee bit more, and then he didn't quite get the service on that side, and then I moved him back to the right, and I think Ali Johnson deserves a great amount of credit because it looked like he could shoot, but he's kept the composure, made the pass, and James has finished it so well.
Give the final word to you, Mark. You were there at the start, you saw it in its infancy. Did you ever think that 16 seasons later James Forrest would still be scoring goals for Celtic?
In the greatest respect, no, because it's such a unique and difficult thing to achieve, particularly at one club. To be at one club the size of Celtic since you're 9 years old, throughout the academy, to then make it anywhere near the first team is a stretch. To have the longevity that he's had in his Celtic career, the medals that come with it, and then this recent accolade of 16 seasons and scoring in every one is quite something. I don't think it will ever be beaten or rivaled again. He's an exceptional player with a great attitude, a great role model, like Brendan Rodgers says, for any young player going through any academy.
And just like that, Hugh Keevans, another Scottish Premiership season almost draws to a close. Sum up what we've learned or what we've seen at the top half and what remains to be played for tomorrow.
We have seen ruthless efficiency from Brendan Rodgers and those Celtic players. You win the title because of 38 games, not just because of today. And over 38 games, they established a 17-point lead over their nearest challenger. It is ruthlessness of the highest order. It is for their biggest challenger, Rangers, to accept new ownership now and to try and break the cycle of success at Celtic, the cycle of failure at Ibrox. And that will start Monday morning when Rangers begin the search for, I think, a new manager, even though Barry Ferguson says he believes he can do the job.
Only three more games remain of the Scottish Premiership season. The table is almost complete. Well done again to Celtic, crowned champions a while ago, lifted the trophy today. Hibs again, a fantastic season, finishing third, but today wasn't without its drama. Dundee United, a late run to get that European spot in fourth, as Aberdeen dropped to fifth and St Mirren sixth place. Tomorrow though, it's all about those playoffs. Will it be Ross County or will it be Dundee who take on Livingston for the final place in the Premiership next season? Enjoy the rest of your weekend. The GBX will be coming up later this evening, of course, as always, to see you through the rest of your Saturday evening. And we will be back Monday night to look back on it all.